Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Marcus Speller, and welcome to the Barcelona Legacy Podcast. This is the fifth of a six-part series to coincide with the release of the Barcelona Legacy, a book that explores how the evolution of today's game begins at Barcelona 25 years ago with the pioneering ideas of Johan Cruyff and was taken on by the likes of Louis van Gaal, Jose Mourinho and Pep Guardiola. It's written by one of our panellists, Jonathan Wilson, who writes for The Guardian, Sports Illustrated and World Soccer, and it's out this month in hardback, ebook, and audiobook. We're also joined today by Paolo Bandini, who is a freelance sports writer and broadcaster. Last episode, we left off discussing Barcelona versus Manchester United in the famous Champions League final in 2009. In this episode, we are a year on and the semi-final of the competition when Barcelona took on Inter. It was the first season that Guardiola and Mourinho had met as coaches and the beginning of one of the game's great rivalries. We're looking at the second leg of the semi-final, Jonathan. But really, the story is about the two legs, of course.
Yeah, and this is the sort of the beginning of the final stage for Mourinho, that he has, of his breakaway from that Cruyffian philosophy, that he'd begun to move away from it at Porto. I think he'd moved more decisively away from it at Chelsea, and then he misses out on the Barcelona job, and that is his sort of final rejection from a club that had nurtured him as a coach. And he I don't think it's too strong to say he sets out to just do the opposite of Barcelona. He sets out to rip down that temple, and you have a cathedral, as Guardiola calls it. And he goes to Inter, and then as luck would have it, they meet in the Champions League group stage, and the two games there are pretty much non-events. There's a 0-0 draw in Milan, a 2-0 win at the Camp Nou, and then they meet again in the semi-final, Inter win 3-1 in Milan, and then back at the Camp Nou, Barca win 1-0. It's an absolute siege of the Inter goal, but they hold out, and win 3-2 in aggregate. The most beautiful defeat of my career, as Mourinho called it.
I've no doubt he did. And of course, at the time, Paolo, this was the Barcelona side that so many people around the world fall in love with. They seemed unbeatable, and Mourinho was so determined.
Absolutely. I mean, actually, I feel like the Italian press has become a bit too enamoured with extraterrestrial metaphors. But I remember at the time when the first leg, when Inter won 3-1, the headline in Gazzetta was, "We are the Martians." Because for them, Barcelona were Martians. They were these aliens who played the best football in the world. And suddenly, Inter were playing on a par with them. And yes, you know, Jose was in his second season there, had sort of gone through this period of awkwardness, actually, even with the Inter fans at first. I think not everyone took to his abrasiveness particularly well at first, but by this point they're eating out of his hand, and the way it happened in, you know, funnily enough, with a Portuguese manager and a distinctly not Italian set of players, a very Italian way of winning that second leg certainly was the perspective in Italy of how it happened.
Yeah, can't forget the ash cloud. These
are Martians who couldn't fly. and that definitely played its part. The Barcelona had to travel to the game by bus. It took 16 hours.
Yeah.
Just because there were no flights over Europe at the time because of, an Icelandic volcano had exploded. There's ash cloud over Europe. And that clearly did affect Barca's preparation. Weirdly, the same thing happened again in 2011 before the final. There was Grimsvötn, the volcano then that erupted. And so Barcelona travelled very early to London for the 2011 final because they were so concerned. They realised how much it affected them having to travel by bus in 2010.
Yeah, and this Barcelona side, though, because the Champions League at the time hadn't been retained, it'd never been won back-to-back, everyone thought this is the side that's going to do it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they've been so good in 2009, and they were so good through the first part of that 2009-10 season. You're utterly dominant in Spain. You're cruising through in the Champions League. Teams were thinking if they got beaten sort of by 3-0, well, we haven't done too badly. And, at the time, we could work out how to play against them. If you sat back, then you're just letting Barcelona have 75-80% of the ball. Inevitably would have 20-25 shots, and you're praying that one of these geniuses all have off days at the same time, none of them go in. But if you pushed high up the pitch, you left space in behind you. And you saw teams did unsettle Barcelona by pressing high up the pitch, but they still lost 3-4-0 because Barcelona then picked them off and hit the space. So there was a distinct sense going into those two games that there's no way of beating this team. We don't know how to do it. And Inter showed you could do it by having 19% possession.
Which is remarkable, Paolo, if you think about it.
Yeah, I mean, of course, they didn't beat them with 19% possession.
Well, there's a bit more to the story.
But they did have the smaller share of possession even in the first leg. And yes, I mean, Jonathan talks about ways to beat them. I mean, that Inter team was so defined by the arrival of Wesley Sneijder at the beginning of the season, right? Like it was a complete sort of transformation in the way they lined up. And for a good part of the season, it was sort of a diamond midfield 4-3-1-2, and you've got Sneijder doing what he does best, which is playing comfortably in that number 10 spot and running the play. But actually, by the time of the semi-final, what Mourinho was doing against Barcelona was lining up in a 4-2-3-1. So he had Eto'o going out to play on the wing, which was already a big ask of a player who you think certainly the public impression at that time was that he was, he'd fallen out with Guardiola because he was being asked to do things that weren't his job as just a striker. But for Mourinho, for whatever reason, he was able to say, no, Milito's the guy who's going to lead the line and you can do this role for us out wide where you can be really productive. But actually, that lineup in the first leg, it had Eto'o, it had Milito, it had Sneijder, it had Pandev. Yes, it's a 4-2-3-1 and Mourinho's brilliant in that formation. It suits him. He likes it when he can get that combativeness high on the flanks. But it's a very attacking set of players. In terms of the actual personnel you've got there, that's a team designed to get at you. And I suppose the first leg is defined a bit as well by the fact that Pedro scores early and at that point Inter have no choice, right? They have to come and do something. But it was quite a bold lineup, I thought. And actually, it was exactly, in theory, what he was going to replicate in the second leg, right up until Pandev gets injured during the warm-ups. And then Christian Kivu comes in instead, and suddenly that looks like a very different team. It looks like a team designed to defend a bit more, although, again, Motta goes off and changes it again. But just to say on that, talking about how hard this Barcelona team was to beat, I believe that first leg was the first game that Guardiola had lost by 2 goals as Barcelona manager at all in 114 games. Mm. So that was, it was quite something. Ash cloud or not, to lose by 2 goals was big.
Yeah.
Just talking about that lineup, that was the lineup that he'd picked away at Chelsea in the last 16 when they'd won 2-1 at home. The assumption had been, from I think everybody, British press, Italian press, that Inter would go to Stamford Bridge and shut up shop and try to hold on, and they didn't. They played that 4-3-3 in a quite attacking way, ended up dominating possession, very un-Mourinho thing to do, and actually were very much the better side, won it 1-0, and I guess after they'd gone 1-0 up, the game did sort of become a little bit attritional, but certainly in the early stages, they were attacking. And I think this is something that we've seen a shift in Mourinho that I think back then he was genuinely pragmatic. He did what it took to win, and that might be attacking, it might be defending. And I think what we've seen more recently is he's fallen back more and more in big games on just defend. And so he's almost become non-pragmatic. He's become ideological, but his ideology is negative.
Yeah.
But I think in that season, he was genuinely pragmatic. And I don't know if this is entirely fair, but would you say that Chelsea game was the first time that season there was a sense of Inter really as a power? Because they sort of scrambled through the group, hadn't they? They only won 2 games. They'd had that very fortuitous maybe is the wrong word, but that very late win against Dynamo Kiev when it had been 1-0 down with 4 minutes to go and then scored twice. which in retrospect was seen as a sort of great example of Mourinho holding his nerve, mm-hmm. of believing in his plan. But, you know, when you're watching that game, that's not how it felt. It felt like, what are you doing? Going to do something. But, you know, it did work. But then that Chelsea game was, you know, a sense of, actually, maybe this team is a little bit better than we thought.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel like in my mind, my image of that Chelsea second leg is Eto'o just sort of running rings around John Terry, really sort of putting him on tilt, and Chelsea looking just overwhelmed by the quality that Inter had going forward. But you're right, the group stage, there was none of that yet. And again, it makes a lot of sense, right? This was a team that, we haven't even mentioned him yet. Zlatan Ibrahimovic was the guy who led the line for Inter, and then he goes and Schneider comes in. It was a team in evolution through the first part of that season. It was a team that didn't work out its identity until the middle point. And that's why I always sort of feel like every year now when I'm talking about the Champions League, I end up sort of repeating over and over. It's all about timing. It's all about being good at the right part of the competition. And Inter were in their stride at the most important part of this competition, which they weren't necessarily at the beginning. You're right.
And Snyder, am I right in saying that he arrived and then was pretty much shoved in the team the next day?
I think it was a derby. I think he came literally off the plane on the Friday and was in the team. I don't remember if it was Saturday or Sunday, the game, but it was literally a day or two later he was in the team for Inter, and he didn't sort of, it wasn't like a narrative where he scored a hat trick and walked off with the match ball, but he was good right away. Like, he stepped right in and played well. Yeah, it was a late transfer. It was one of those things that happened at the end of the window. Schneider sort of realizing that he wasn't actually going to get what he needed at Madrid, and Madrid kind of being at that point of, no, we need to get him out the door, and completely defining, just absolutely changed everything for that Inter team and for Mourinho and ultimately for his legacy there.
Yeah, and this was when Mourinho, because one can easily forget this in Mourinho's, at his current club and Manchester United and the way he's been performing and so on, but before the game against Chelsea, which we've mentioned a few times, you know, he said, yeah, I normally get what I want at Stamford Bridge. There was a confidence. There was an aura. He still had that aura. I mean, he did the treble with Inter, lest we forget, of course. But going into that game against Barcelona, not only were Barcelona the best side in Europe at the time, one would argue, as Paolo said, Inter had lost probably one of their best players, certainly, in Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and he'd gone to Barcelona, which showed you that Barcelona at the time was saying, well, we'll have him. We can basically have whoever we want.
And I think the idea of signing Ibrahimovic was to give them a different option. But by the following season, it had become about the absolute purity of the Barca way, of it being what we in this country call tiki-taka, a phrase that Guardiola hates, but that close passing possession football. But in that sort of middle season, the season between the two Champions Leagues, there was a feeling of, actually, maybe we do need another option. But the problem is Ibrahimovic actually reduces your options because he's not mobile enough to make those runs that Eto'o ended up making, mm-hmm. With whatever degree of reluctance. But, you know, Eto'o did end up playing wide on the right so Messi could play as the false nine. Well, Ibrahimovic wasn't happy with that at all. And you saw then the following season when David Villa came in, how somebody making those darting runs could make Messi more effective. And Ibrahimovic just wouldn't do that. He wasn't prepared to do that. Clearly, temperamentally, he and Guardiola never got on. I mean, he just sort of dismissed him. He dismissed him as the philosopher. And Ibrahimovic, actually, you see through his career, was very sort of sceptical of theorists as coaches. I mean, he hated Van Gaal as well. That didn't work out when Van Gaal was the sporting director at Ajax. So Ibrahimovic always needed to be the main man in the team. And he was prepared to sacrifice himself within certain parameters. And Mourinho had been very, very good at getting the best out of him. And there was a story, I think it was the third last game of that last season he had at Inter, when the title had pretty much been wrapped up. And Ibrahimovic sort of, I'm tired now, can I come off at half time? And Mourinho's like, no, get out there. And he scores in the second half. And I think he scored 3 goals in the last 2 games of the season. And as a result, wins top scorer. And there was almost, you know, you see this with a lot of players. They sort of talk about how Mourinho almost knew them better than knew themselves. He knew what was good for them. And that is something that's definitely diminished recently. And so, you know, he and Ibrahimovic had a very close relationship. And I think Ibrahimovic pretty quickly recognised he wasn't going to have that with Guardiola and probably regretted leaving.
I was re-watching the highlights of this game earlier, and there's a moment which I just sort of, one of those delicious sort of never explained moments in detail in the highlights. I think it was just before half-time, and Guardiola's having a word with Ibrahimovic by the sideline. And Mourinho saunters over, sort of puts his hand on Pep's shoulder and has a little interjection in their conversation.
That's not how you talk to him.
You're right. You just don't. Whatever he said, I'm sure it was something. Provocative and very Jose. But yes, it was a wonderful little aside.
But of course, if Ibrahimovic had played for Inter, Melito would not have done. Right. Melito was absolutely magnificent.
Often overlooked
season.
Because
and I have to say I'd forgotten how good he was till again rewatching this game.
Melito, and but he took it on board anyway.
In the first goal. So not only Barcelona arrive there as massive favourites, but they take lead after 19 minutes.
And Barcelona get the breakthrough through Pedro. Just after they'd had a scare at one end, it's Pedro who converts at the other.
Pedro scoring Maxwell Cup, like a classic sort of Barcelona goal. Then on the half hour, it's a really well-worked goal. Eto gets a ball on the right, plays a ball into the box. Melito who uses his strength.
Goal! Schneider equalises!
Take the ball, was back to goal, and turn, lay it off to Schneider coming in from the left. He finishes it very, very well. But that sort of the strength of Melito, you see his awareness, you see his power, you see his intelligence, how he uses his body. And you sort of think, he was really good for that. One,
it was great for Genoa the year before. Actually, two years later, I think he scored more than 20 goals for Inter as well.
I'm being unfair, but he's a player who's quickly faded from view, shall we say. And at half time, things were going so well for Inter that Mourinho said, I think we're going to win 4-1. And he was very nearly right. Mm. And 3 minutes in the second half, they get a second.
Melito to Maicon! Goal to Inter!
It was a quick break. Melito ends up in the end, sort of laying it off to Maicon to score.
So Schneider's there again, Melito! And no one deserves a goal more than Diego Melito!
30 minutes later, they get another one. And again, it's on the break. It's an Eto cross from the right again. Schneider coming in on the back post. And his head is actually not very good. It goes back across goal, but Melito's there to nod it in.
Possibly offside. But...
it's close. It's close. But possibly offside. Hmm. And of course, Barca, when Mourinho starts complaining about Barca getting refereeing decisions, that's one of the two things from this game that we always talk about.
Yeah.
And the second one is an absolutely blatant penalty when Schneider goes through the back of Dani Alves in the box. And I think Dani Alves ended up getting booked for diving when the whole weight of Schneider's gone through the back of his right ankle. Mm. So, Inter did have a little bit of luck with refereeing decisions. But on the balance of play, 3-1 was probably fair enough.
And they kept Messi very quiet in that game.
Yeah, they did.
Zanetti did a good job on him.
Yeah. And that again, I think, shows the Mourinho, when you give him a defensive task, he's very good at working out a way of doing it. And I think a more mobile Barca, I think the Barca as we subsequently saw, and as we'll talk about in the next podcast, when Barca get Veer and they get a more mobile front three, playing with that low block as Mourinho tried to do, it's much harder. It's much more vulnerable. So Ibrahimovic sort of upset the...
Almost helped Mourinho in his approach to the...
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare tri-term medical plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Game. And into the second leg, Paolo. If anybody watches that game, they'll remember where and all the rest of it, even though it was only 1-0 and 19% possession. Obviously, Thiago Motta was sent off and many people were angry with Busquets' reaction to that. But what an epic battle it was.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, I've copied down a little line from Gazzetta when I was bringing the coverage game, which is, what does it matter to score goals when you can slide, cover, track back, stop, free? Like, that, it's that idea again of like, what's important in football? It's not, you know, not who needs to score goals. We can be brilliant at something else. And
did Mourinho write that himself?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, the Italian press, well, I mean, you have to bear in mind that, you know, Italian football was not at its highest ebb at this moment in time. I think there was a real sort of, and there has been, it's frankly extended for some time into the more recent past, and is only now being diluted by Juventus's sort of consistency in Europe. But there's been quite an inferiority complex going on for Italian football as a result of the slide down the UEFA rankings and all the rest. And yes, I think for you know, a not exactly even-handed national press, and especially Gazzetta, because Gazzetta is based in Milan, and in Italy, all of these papers tend to skew towards the clubs in their home cities. Yes, it was a pretty jubilant reaction to everything that went on. But look, it was who knows how this game would have gone if Motta wasn't sent off. Mourinho said afterwards, I think it was a while afterwards, someone was talking to him about parking buses, and he said, you know, you're 3-1 down, so you're 3-1 up against that Barcelona team, and you've just had a man sent off. You know, you'd park a plane if you could. And fair enough, you know, it's he's not wrong. What are you supposed to do against this team that has been blowing everyone away? And the fact is that Inter did it really, really incredibly well. So after Motta goes off, Eto'o and Milito literally get pulled back into midfield. They're no longer playing as forwards at all, and Schneider's operating as a sort of, I guess, a false nine, barely seeing the ball at all, and let alone in Barcelona's half. There was a point when Inter won a corner on sort of one of the very, very rare phase forward, and Milito went to take it. And I think he had two men in the box and seven Barcelona defenders. So there was no pretense. There was no pretense of that this was going to be an attempt to break out an attack, really, after they went down to 10 men. They honestly didn't give up anything. There was no, you know, until Piqué pulls off this sort of amazing moment of suddenly I'm a centre forward, there was no threat from Barcelona particularly. There was a lot of stuff from outside the area. I think there was one just before, so I think Boyan got a header at the far post, which he should have put on target.
Really should have done. Completely unmarked at the back post. It's right on his head, and he just slides it a couple of feet wide.
To be fair, if you're going to leave a man unmarked, though, in that Barcelona
yeah,
side.
Yeah.
Well, and he even got that right.
it's funny, isn't it? Because I was thinking that when I was looking back over this. You think the substitutions that Barcelona made, Boyan coming on, Jeffren coming on, they're not... You know, it's not like even you look at Pep's Man City team now at the weekend when he's bringing De Bruyne off the bench, Jesus off the bench, and Sané off the bench. It wasn't like that Barcelona team in that moment anyway.
Yeah, because Boyan set up the fifth goal for Jeffren the next time that Guardiola Mourinho met.
Yeah,
so.
True. But yeah, you know, not players who you think of as necessarily being the untouchable one. And I think before that Boyan chance, it was mostly chances from outside the area. Ibrahimovic had one that went wide. I think maybe in the first half, Messi had one that required a decent save from...
Julio Cesar,
yes.
Well, actually, Julio Cesar, to be fair, makes three or four really good saves, I'd say.
Do you think there were three or four really good ones? I didn't feel like they were that... There were a few
saves. The
one
from Messi is the best one. He's sort of a shot about 20 yards. And yeah, he sort of dives low to his right. I
didn't think many of the others were anything you wouldn't expect a keeper playing in a Champions League semi-final.
Well, okay, maybe, but he still has to make three or four saves.
But I think the overall point Paolo is saying is that it wasn't like Barcelona where there was goal mouth scrambles skin of their teeth. It was, and this is classic Mourinho, isn't it? What we've come to know, and some love and some hate. They set their stall out after that sending off, and he said, "Go on then. Have a go," and they couldn't do it, and that gives him so much joy as his jubilant and, dare I say, sort of quite strange celebration in some ways suggested after the final whistle.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of other things I want to talk about.
Course,
let's
course,
talk about
yeah.
Let's talk about the celebration.
Okay,
when he leaves the bench, he doesn't do what normally coaches do, which is to go and hug their players or shake hands with the opposition, or maybe
he certainly didn't do that.
Do some patronising consolation of Guardiola. Never mind, mate. Better luck next time. You know, he sprints with his arm up, finger raised. You know, like he's Jesse Lingard just scored the winning FA Cup final, and goes sprinting over to the Inter fans in the top corner at the Camp Nou. Victor Valdes tries to cut him off for some reason.
It's quite bizarre.
Bit of an argument. Sully Montari kind of comes in and gets rid of Valdes.
Sprinklers come on.
And that, even better for Mourinho, because he hasn't just beaten Barca, he's knocked the halo sideways.
Yeah.
This isn't, you know, Mexican club, this sort of great sort of, you know, we're the nice guys here. you're so nice that when the opposition beat us, we put the sprinklers on so they can't celebrate on the pitch.
It's often forgotten about those little things about Barcelona.
He's won that on every level, but he's not just beaten them; he's damaged their self image. But yeah, I think it's characteristic, or it's telling of how Mourinho won the propaganda battle as well. A, that sprinkler's being turned on, and B, our memories of the sending off. Our memory of it is Busquets peeking through his fingers, and sure, he made more of it than was there. But Motta had already been booked, and he sticks his hand in another player's face and pushes him away. Now, if that had been a second yellow, nobody in the world could have complained about it. If you put your hand in somebody's face and push, even if you're not looking at him, you cannot complain at yellow card. The fact it was a straight red probably was wrong.
Yeah.
But either way, Motta's off the pitch. So the fact that we think of that as a scandal, and we think of Busquets as play acting, which absolutely he made the most of it, tells you just how good Mourinho is at kind of manipulating our memory of events.
I think history is always written a bit by the victors, isn't it? You know, that's
the victors and Brian Glanville. Yeah.
But yeah, I completely agree with you. I think it was a second yellow rather than a straight red, which is what he got. I think a straight red, when you look at it, it isn't a violent push. It's a brush, but he shouldn't be putting his hand up there. So yeah, he's off either way. And yes, the fact that Busquets does his little peekaboo is sort of by the by. It was funny, Motta literally the day before the game in the pre-game press conference had said, "Oh, Barcelona players are always throwing themselves on the floor." So there was a certain irony to the fact that he failed to account for the likelihood of doing this. But he was an idiot. The first booking was absolutely clear cut, and so he shouldn't have been doing anything like that at all.
Yeah,
and then the other thing I think it's worth picking up on is, and Paolo mentioned it, the way that Milito and Eto drop back and become these sort of auxiliary fullbacks, and the story that's told, it's obviously very hard for us to know, is that Mourinho didn't tell them to do that. That he would have told them to do that, but he didn't need to. Because, this is interesting about Mourinho's whole methodology, he thinks that football is so complex that there's the automizations, for want of a much better word. There's a word that Eden Hazard used when he was asked about what's the difference between Conte and Mourinho. And he said Conte's better at the automizations, meaning these sort of preset moves of 5 or 6 passes, whatever, where we know that if the right back gets the ball in this position, the right side of holding midfielder makes this run, and he makes this run, and then I have to come in there, and I know that ball's going to be played. And if you practice those and you do them quickly, and you get a game situation where the opportunity to enact that happens, then you can do it, half a second, a second faster than if you haven't practiced them, and that's obviously makes it harder to defend against. And that's one of the reasons why club football is quicker than international football, because international football, you don't have a time to get those automatisations. Mourinho thinks football's too complicated to do that. He thinks that it's too much of a risk just waiting for those opportunities to enact those automatisations to occur. So he says that what he prefers to do is psychologically to prepare his players that in any given situation, they make the right decision. And so for him, the fact that these two centre-forwards, as soon as they go a man down, realise that their job is to drop in to become defensive wide midfielders without him needing to tell them. That shows the level of mental preparation, the level of tactical preparation he's got them to is absolutely perfect. That they're already making actually quite big calls themselves, and then a little glance to the bench is, this is right. Yeah, that's right. Mm. And of course, they were both magnificent. Well, I mean, every interplayer is magnificent in that game, but they particularly, because they were doing jobs that were so unnatural for them, mm-hmm. I think have to take great credit.
It did cross my mind with Eto as well, like how much, this was, because we already mentioned Ibrahimovic and switching sides, but the fact that this was an opportunity to stick the I don't know if the knife in is the right word, but to stick it to Guardiola, to say, hey, didn't give me, even though he's doing kind of what Guardiola wanted him to, playing out wide and sacrificing himself, you didn't make me feel wanted and sort of needed and essential like they do here at Inter, and I'm going to show you how much more valuable I am than the guy you spent a bunch of money to replace me with.
Absolutely.
And that relationship had already begun to break down, the relationship between Guardiola and Ibrahimovic. And is it between the two legs of this game, or is it between the two legs of the Arsenal game? I can't remember. But it's sort of been in the sort of, within the sort of 2 or 3 weeks before the second leg, the incident where Ibrahimovic is raging at Guardiola having been substituted, and in the dressing room afterwards he kicks the skip that they keep the kit in, and it goes kind of flying over the floor, and Ibrahimovic is trying to provoke some kind of huge row so he can clear the air with Guardiola, who's somebody who hates confrontation. And Guardiola just sort of picks up the skip and carries it out like a little caretaker, to use a very English phrase.
My goodness. Well, of course, Inter, they overcame Barcelona. And for Mourinho, is, as we've just said, a huge sort of dent in the Barcelona character or whatever you want to say. And Jonathan, you've often described him as this sort of fallen angel of Barcelona and Cruyffian and so on and so forth. Well, who do they play in the final? Louis van Gaal's Bayern Munich. And fairly handedly beat them 2-0, Diego Milito with both goals.
Yeah, I mean, and yeah, to meet his nemesis and his mentor, it's an extraordinary script. And yeah, van Gaal was sort of, I remember the pre-match press conference, my final was in Madrid, and that pre-match press conference, and van Gaal was sort of very much playing a sort of indulgent uncle of kind of, yeah, well, I wouldn't have gone about the semi-final quite like that. But, you know, you have to give a young man credit, blah, blah, blah. I mean, the truth is Inter were a better side than Bayern. Yes. Bayern was still very young. The players like Thomas Müller, who would go on to be kind of great stars, were... I mean, I think Müller looked kind of pretty callow in that final. That players like Lucio and you were just smarter than him. And
Walter Samwell.
Walter Samwell, yeah. You're sort of just... more experienced and sort of knew how to handle a young tyro like that. And of course, van Gaal afterwards, the classic sort of excuse of those who practice the Cruyffian philosophy of, well, of course, defensive football is much easier. We tried to attack. Yeah, you lost 2-0. Doesn't really matter. And of course, Milito gets the two goals because Milito had that golden season. Mm-hmm. And the combination of, I mean, particularly the semi-final and then the final in the Bernabeu, is what gets Mourinho the Madrid job the following year and sets up the huge rivalry that has followed.
Yeah, which we now know and love, Paolo.
Yeah.
Love, well, certainly know it.
Yeah, I think there have been moments where it's been more lovable than right now. I don't know that it feels as much of a close rivalry at the moment. I think, you know, even though you've got Jose's United finishing second to Pep City, it feels like there's a gulf there and that one of those men has a... establish an identity with his team that is carrying forward, and the other one is frustrated and not getting. I don't know. Again, it comes to an identity for me. I just don't feel like this current Man United team. I see the identity in it. I saw, for instance, with that Inter team. I don't feel like there's a clear idea of who United are under Mourinho at the moment.
Mm. But obviously with Guardiola himself, a part of his story is this rivalry with Mourinho, and as you say, this was the season. This was the time when that rivalry was very much established.
Yeah, this was it at its peak, that these two candidates for Barcelona job, one of them successful, one of them is not, and the one who's, you know, who's rejected comes back to win, albeit winning by losing, which is a very Mourinho way of doing things, in the Camp Nou, and the sprinklers going on, you know, and yeah, it was arguably the last time, I think, that Mourinho's philosophy enjoyed it. A huge victory over Guardiola. And of course, subsequently, he did win the league with Real Madrid. But this was a time when you began to doubt Guardiola and think, is this really... Maybe this isn't the thing we thought it was. And then by the following season, it very much is the thing we thought it was. So, yeah, but this is the real sort of... the real height of the rivalry.
I think it's worth adding as well, because we actually haven't mentioned it yet, that in all of this, and in all that, I completely felt like over two legs, Inter deserved their place in the final. Bojan Krcic does score in the 93rd minute with a goal that is disallowed for a handball by Touré that is questionable again. It's, you know, it's kicked into his hand at very close range.
And his hand is in front of his chest. If the hand hadn't been there, it would have hit his stomach. And actually, you have to watch about three replays before you see it.
Yeah.
The ball does hit his hand, but he's 4 feet, 5 feet from... Was it Lucio clearing it, I think?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And it bounces to Bojan, who does stick it away. So again, when Mourinho subsequently... is moaning on and on and on about all these decisions that go against him. And, you know, we even that game we have to win with 10 men. Well, yeah, but this UEFA conspiracy missed a really, really good opportunity to kind of to put you out.
It's funny you mentioned that decision. I remember the Thiago Motta sending off more. Maybe I've fallen for the trick there. Well, there we are. That is, we've come to the end of another Barcelona Legacy podcast. Paolo Bandini, thank you very much indeed. Yes. And Jonathan Wilson, of course, thank you. That was the fifth podcast of a six-part series, of course, to coincide with the release of the Barcelona Legacy, a book that explores how the evolution of today's game begins at Barcelona 25 years ago with the pioneering ideas of Johan Cruyff and was taken on by the likes of Louis van Gaal, Jose Mourinho and Pep Guardiola. We'll see you next time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.